Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Cybersecurity Matters podcast. My name is Christian Redshaw, and joining me, as always, but virtually, is my co-host, Mr. Dominic Vogel. Dominic, who do we have as our virtual guest today?
Today we have Sabrina Woodworth, who is the founder and author of Work Lessons 101. Really interesting person who is based locally here in Vancouver. And I think, you know, she has a very interesting career background. I think she's an engineer by trade, if I recall correct. I think, you know, our audience is really going to enjoy sort of her viewpoints both on corporate and how people can, especially those who are new into their career, how they can sort of better acclimatize to the workplace environment outside of school.
Awesome. Well, that's great to set the stage that way. So let's get right to it. We'll bring Sabrina in and we'll be right back.
Sabrina, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to chat with Christian and I. We're really looking forward to this. I'm sure will be an epic conversation.
Thank you.
So good to have you. So it looks like I get the first question here, and we want to get to know you. We've gotten to know you a little bit here before the recording, but for those of our viewers that don't know you, tell us a little bit about your life story and your career progression to get to where you are today.
Okay. I've had many ups and downs.
Multifaceted.
Oh, yeah. So I'll just do a tiny background before my career.
Sure.
I'm assuming my career is probably the more interesting stuff your audience wants. So I grew up in Ontario. I moved to British Columbia as a teenager. My biggest thing from my childhood and university days is I was a competitive hockey player, so ice hockey, right out to being invited out to the junior Olympic team.
Wow, I was a non-competitive hockey player. So,
oh yeah. I don't play anymore because I am so competitive. Okay. I'm very competitive when it comes to hockey. When you play an elite sport up to that level, it's very hard to go to beer league. But I'm actually, now it's been about a 10-year break since I played, so I'm actually thinking of maybe just going into a beer league again just to have some fun and get into shape. And
I think you would probably wipe the floor with me even still.
Well, I'd probably puke my first time on the ice. It's definitely a different type of exercise than running and cardio like I do now. Yeah. So that was kind of my, I played varsity in university. Once I graduated from University of British Columbia in materials engineering in 2006, I kind of gave up that hockey. But pretty much for my first 23 years of my life, I reffed it, I coached it. I played it at a really competitive high level, even reffed at the international level. So that kind of gave me a really unique team player, and the refereeing, just dealing with confrontation, really kind of a unique skill set that really helped prepare me for my corporate career. So I've worked for Fluor Corporation, which is an engineering and construction company, a Fortune 500 company based out of Dallas, Texas, for the past 14 years. So my career journey is very unique. We can get into the details of that. But I started in the Vancouver office in the mining industry. Then I, 6 years into my career, I finally got the opportunity to take an international assignment to Mongolia, which was my absolute career game changer. Everything changed after that. I progressed within a year to third in command of a $6 billion project. So, and had a huge team of nationals, very diverse team. Actually, I had several different nationalities on my team, but, you know, so I had to work with translators every day. So it was a really unique opportunity. And that opportunity led to the next big career game changer, which was moving to our Canadian corporate headquarters in Calgary, moving into corporate business development, and then into my home, into project management, which is where I am now. So currently a project manager in engineering construction, water treatment plant. But actually this exact minute in my career, I'm actually on maternity leave.
Okay.
So that is kind of what's my side business, which is actually how I met Dominic. This was through Work Lessons 101, which is a side company. sole proprietorship that I started last May, so May 2019, which targets basically helping in developing aspiring professionals. So I would say anyone who's in the university age bracket all the way up to about their first decade of their career, and I target and prep them. I don't do it through coaching, so I'm not a career coach. I'm someone who just teaches the lessons that you need to maneuver internal politics and how to successfully climb the corporate ladder to reach your career aspirations, and really how to develop an overall career plan with short to long-term goals. I'm kind of understanding and avoiding some of the classic rookie mistakes that so many new grads and entry-level employees in the corporate world make. So that's kind of how I structured my book that will come out as early as this summer. But if I can secure a publishing deal, it'll be sometime next year.
Mm-hmm. So essentially taking the lessons that you've learned in your very multifaceted career and imparting that wisdom to the budding workforce of professionals.
Yeah, it's just so I was very naive too when I was 23 years old. So this is by no means knock in the younger generation. It's just I don't find the academic, like, I am pro school, so I don't want there's so many people out there that are entrepreneurs, you don't need a degree. And while I support that many industries you don't need a degree, especially if you're going into a ton of debt, I think that's a little bit more to our neighbors in the United States, more so than Canada. But even our degrees aren't cheap anymore. I still see value in a degree, especially me as a practicing engineer. It's an absolute necessity to have a degree. And then your certifications, you know, medical fields, so many fields need degrees. I just, universities necessarily equip students and new grads with some of the common sense, judgmental maneuvering. And it comes right down to like how to write an effective resume and how to prepare for a, you know, with a Fortune 500 company. Like, what does an actual employer want to hear? How do you sell your credentials to secure a position and a job offer? That's like very entry level. But then how to build an influential network, like how to build a sellable name and a reputation that secures you career opportunities. So many people enter the corporate world and think their boss actually gives a rat's ass about their career. And while some bosses might, and I have had great bosses, many, many, many don't. So how can you tell the difference between an ally to not an ally? Because a lot of bosses, if you're high potential, don't want to lose you off your team and you get pigeonholed. So how do you maneuver out of that? That's what school doesn't prep you for. School, I think, almost can send slightly naive, idealistic, just simple advice. Be yourself. How's that helpful? You need to be a
transition from the academic environment to the real world of business.
Kind of theory to practical is how I say it. You know, there's the Fortune 500 world works in practical. School is a great base and a great theory base, and it's really, really handy for information-based industries. But as soon as you're putting clients yelling at you and you're put on the spot, you need to work with confrontation, you need to manage unrealistic expectations, and you need to be a really quick learner. And you need to, you know, a lot of people think after their degree, the learning stops. And I hate to break it to you, the learning, and it never stops. And if it does stop, you become stagnant and you become an employee that over time will lose their own market share and their own value to the organization. And I think you're seeing a lot of that in the world right now. Really talented people are finding themselves tossed out the door with very little notice and very little thank you and recognition. So the corporate world's really cold-hearted as well. And I think, you need to have that thick skin, develop it, that you could put your heart and soul into something and you might not be recognized for it. So part of that was starting Work Lessons 101, because that's what I care about. I care about helping people. And, you know, so it's what I decide to put my time into instead of, you know, necessarily working for someone else and putting your time into something that you don't, at the end of the day, have a huge influence over.
Well, that's obviously a win for. This will be my last question, Dominic, and I'll pass the microphone over, the talking stick over to you. But obviously, that is a big win. You've identified a big education and understanding gap there. That's going to be a big win for the new workforce, but a big win also for the organizations that end up getting somebody that you've worked with that will be able to fit in better, be able to relationally connect in better earlier on, and be able to make a contribution in all likelihood out of the gate and be a good investment for these companies.
Yeah, and losing employees, like, I can't remember. I don't know the statistics in the studies, but I've done the research and I do have it. Whereas I think it's about 4 to 5 years. The industry, like my industry, engineering and construction, billion dollars. There's so much processes involved. And so, you know, you could be 8 years into your career till like the payoff the company's invested in you really comes in. But I would say it's probably about 4 to 5 years where you're really kind of self-sufficient and you become a leader and mm-hmm. you can start to have direct reports. And yeah, so if you like invest all that money into training, mentorship, and then I think an average millennial moves companies every four years, you've mm-hmm. just lost that investment. And there mm-hmm. are things, you know, and it's not just simply given a promotion because that's short-lived. As so many studies have revealed, it's given proper recognition, ongoing training, ongoing mentorship, and given the opportunities to entry-level employees to kind of have the sky's the limit, mm-hmm. if that's what they want, but also showing them what they want. Because a lot of people I've worked with over the years say yes to every opportunity, and they're my age now, so they're 10 to 15 years into their career, and they aren't happy and fulfilled because, you know what, they don't want to be an executive, because when you're an executive in a Fortune 500 company, it's not a 40-hour work week anymore. Mm-hmm. And again, anyone who tells you that are lying to you, or they don't know. They mm-hmm. all work 60 hours plus. They are mm-hmm. owned by the company. And I don't mean that in a negative way, because sure. at least my company treats me very, very well. There's a yeah. lot of perks. I'm paid very well. I have a lot of benefits and luxuries that so many companies don't give, or smaller companies can't afford to give their employees. So there are perks, but you know, when they hand you over that company phone, which is, I always call a transitional phase between entry level to managerial position-ish, mm-hmm. There's ties to that phone. They expect that you pick up, and you know, it's not an hour by hour timesheet anymore at that point. And you need to understand what that title and that responsibility is like. I want to be a department manager. I want to be an executive. I want to be a business line president. I was like, do you know what a business line president is? Like, at least in my company, in the finance world.
You're taking me back in time on my own journey here.
And you sacrifice so much. And if you want it, awesome, go for it. I'm the person to talk to teach you how to get there. But part of it, there is pride and knowledge to tell you that you don't want to pass a certain level in your career. There's other skills you can teach so you continue to progress professionally and personally without going necessarily up that linear ladder. And just teaching you to understand your values and your priorities and make sure you make time for them so you don't have great regrets. So part of researching for my book, I interviewed dozens and dozens and dozens of executive to CEO levels. And the last question I asked each and every one of them in my interviews, especially in the interviews that were really direct, transparent, and honest, is I always asked them what their biggest regret was in their life, not their career, their life. And not one of them, these interviews are confidential, but the information I release in studies, but the individual who give the responses will always remain confidential. But out of all the interviews, not one gave a career regret. So I think that is kind of shocking when I first started to get the research completed and started to really reflect on it, that the most common regret was around time. And how they spent their time and how they prioritized their time. Because I've been in business development, and when a bid for a $3 billion project is due, there is absolutely nothing that in that moment is more important than that. And if you constantly live in that environment, you continually postpone going to the gym, cooking a meal, going to your son's little late game, even up to potentially missing your kids' graduations and so forth and so on, being divorced, allowing your relationship to demise itself because it happens over time. It doesn't happen in one incident. You know, it happens over years and years and years of neglect and years and years and years of not prioritizing your actual true priorities and core values. And I guess it's kind of like what they say, that you react to a crisis and not what's important, or urgent and not what's important.
Very good.
I know we're running short on time. There's one question I wanted to really dive into with you was, and you and I have been connected on LinkedIn for, I want to say, a few months now, but I always really enjoy the great content that you put out on a consistent basis. And recently, I know you were talking about workplace culture, and specifically around sort of toxic workplace cultures. What are things that, you know, small and mid-sized businesses can do to really make sure that they promote a positive, empowering culture rather than let their workplace culture sort of slide into a toxic culture? How can they control that?
They got to keep it always human. And what I mean by that is, so, you know, in university, when you walk in on your first day, there's 300 students in an auditorium, and you're really at that point just a number. And so mid-sized organizations do have this one, into small organizations have this one beautiful element that they don't have thousands of employees typically, that they can actually connect and potentially know everybody that actually reports to them. You know, sometimes department managers in my company have 300 to 400 people. And at that point, once you start to get past 150 people, it's really hard to understand each and every one of them on an individual level and understand their needs. When smaller organizations, they might not have that time struggle to management struggle. So I think it's just touching base with your employees. So the biggest thing to on a daily thing is little things like, you know, on Friday, promote your leaders underneath you to recognize and give them a tiny little budget. So if that's just bringing in muffins Friday mornings, or random days here and there, taking out their teams for lunch and thanking and recognizing them, giving them a hand written thank you note, you know, picking them up when they actually exceed your expectations, and let them know that you exceeded their expectations, one-on-one. Spot bonuses are always nice. You know, raises and promotions are obviously the permanent thing because that gets added onto your annual salary. But again, walking them through why they got it and why this year they got promoted versus not last year. It's also important to give them the critical feedback. That's why they're not being promoted. Because one of the struggles that I hear constantly from the people who write to me is, I want this role. And they keep telling me that I can have this role, but yet they never give it to me. So there's obviously some disconnect there. And eventually these employees leave because so many bosses aren't comfortable in giving confrontational constructive feedback. So you need to actually do this always in private, always one-on-one behind closed doors. Ask your employee what they want and where they see their career. And if those goals are completely unrealistic via the skill level they're at, you kind of need to tell them that. Maybe not in that direct way, but you're saying that's maybe a 5-year away goal. So the role I see for you in the next 2 years is this, and this is what you need to do. And I want you to go off, put a plan together, meet with me in 3 months to tell me what your plan is, and we'll work together. I think there needs to be that safe environment. You need to create this beautifully safe environment where it's established in trust and respect, where I can go to you with bad news, but I can go with you in good news, and none of the environment actually changes. That you embrace the bad news. So when I was a project manager on multiple small projects, so small sustaining cap, those projects range from $1 million to $30 million, which is small for my business. But I have multiple teams that are on multiple projects. So they have kind of like conflicting priorities. And the reason I ended up having such a great strong repertoire in that area is that they could come to me with bad news. So because there's such little projects and the schedules are so cut and there's no like forgiveness budget that you get on big projects, that they had to flag things right away. And if they came to me and I snapped at them or told them off or told them that, oh, how could you miss something? How could you miss something at your level? How does that help the situation?
Right.
You need to react, positively, you need to work together, always involve them, allow them to come up with a conclusion with you, bring them to critical client meetings, reward them. So my employees, some of the junior employees that I worked with, I actually told them that I'm taking you to this meeting, but you cannot speak. If you speak, you'll let me down. There's going to be things that get heated in this meeting and you might think you need to break the ice. You got to trust me, because sometimes I want them to want that meeting to get heated because I have a strategy. And by you interrupting it, you've now destroyed my strategy. So you're coming because I think you got potential and I think you need to be in these meetings. So you learn, but you need to sit there and shut up, basically. and that honesty and that safe thing. And then they come back why didn't you say this? I would have said this. And then sometimes I miss things too. I'm by no means always right. So that they teach me too. And there's this two-way mentorship. You know, there's reverse mentoring and there's mentoring to me to the younger employee. And I can get just as much out of the relationship in a safe, trust environment. So mid-organizations, I think, can do that at a greater level because they can empower their middle management. So the quote fails typically in the middle management. Upper management's usually pretty talented, but middle management's huge, and you got a diverse people. Like, you got the hard skill type people who just got promoted because they're super, like, subject matter experts, and they're very good at their credibility technical thing, but they're not leaders, they're not communicators, you know, but their ego can't handle not being the lead. So again, they probably do more damage in a managerial mentorship with entry-level employees than they do good. And I think that middle-sized companies have a better training, have access to be more one-on-one training to kind of to teach and coach those people, because they kind of slip through the cracks in big organizations. They're resume kind of does a lot more of their selling versus the individual 360 reviews their teams give. Whereas in middle management, I don't think there's much room for those types of non-leaders to hide.
Yeah, like that non-leaders.
That's such phenomenal insight, Sabrina, you know, and we genuinely appreciate, and like I said, I appreciate everything that you post online on LinkedIn. I think it's phenomenal content. What's the best way for people to get a hold of you or to reach out to you? Is it LinkedIn?
So I'm huge on LinkedIn. Oh, huge. There, may toot my own flag. I am highly active on LinkedIn and Instagram. So my Instagram handle is worklessons101. And then my LinkedIn, I actually post on under my name, Sabrina Woodworth. Direct message me on either platforms is a way that you can send me your questions. I do a weekly Q&A show. And then sometimes the question people ask doesn't like translate into like a broad question that can help multiple people. So I kind of work with them one-on-one. But that's two ways, but probably the absolute best way to get a hold of me is actually go to my website contact page. And my website again is worklessons101.com.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely, and you know, like I said, this has been a fantastic chock full information. You know, we're so grateful to you for your time and all the valuable content that you put out there. Enjoy the rest of your day. We'll chat again soon. Thank you again so much. We really appreciate
it. Thanks so much, Sabrina.
Have a wonderful week.
You as well.
You as well. And Krish and I will be right back momentarily to wrap things up for the show.
I really appreciated that conversation there, Dominic, with Sabrina. It really spoke to a different time in my own history of middle management in bigger companies. And, you know, there are some good leaders in certain organizations, particularly the one that I was in. But this is a big, you know, leadership hole in a lot of places, where you have large sections of middle management, and there's a lot of dysfunction there. So there's a big gap between the big power leaders at the top level, the senior leadership team, and the lower level. And so I think she, aside from helping new professionals in their career beginnings, getting started, she has a lot of value to offer to larger organizations on the business side.
Absolutely. You know, and for those who aren't following her on LinkedIn or Instagram, I highly recommend following her because, you know, she posts such interesting content for even for someone who's a seasoned veteran and who's been in corporate for many, many years. You know, she writes such interesting has such interesting observations in terms of how to best deal with sort of the workplace cultures of today, of which, you know, when you're learning in school, you don't learn that stuff. And many people still struggle with that many years after. So it's very, very interesting, sort of her area of expertise.
Mm-hmm. I would say that Sabrina is a content generating value machine. That was my experience in our conversation today. And so we thank our audience for watching. You can check out our other podcasts, as always, on conversationsthatmatter.tv. Or you can find our podcast on the Conversations That Matter YouTube channel under Conversations That Matter playlist, or anywhere that you normally listen to your podcasts. And we will see you next week.